The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Now, on this day 20 years ago, Charles Haughey died. In life, he dominated Irish political life for over four decades. He divided opinion, with some seeing him as the most able politician the country has produced, while others see him as self-serving, vain and a real corrosive stain on the body politic. Where does the truth lie? Well, I'm delighted that Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics at Dublin City University and author of Haughey, joins me now. You're welcome to the studio, Gary. And it was about 10 o'clock, wasn't it, in the morning on this day 20 years ago.
Yeah, it was Tuesday morning, and he had been sick for quite a while. He had prostate cancer, which had affected him for a number of years. And he was 80 at this stage. And just at about 10 a.m., I think he had slipped into a coma over the previous 24 hours. And I mean, like many families, I think, who have that loved one who was dying at home, his family gathered around the bed and literally saw him step away. He had a brother who was a priest, Father Owen Haughey, who died a number of years ago, who was an oblate father in Inchicore, and he just got there at the end to say a few prayers, as you know would normally be the case. And then he sort of slipped off into the pages of history, as they say.
It is two decades, right, since he passed away. And you often see with controversial figures that in the fullness of time, history is kind to them. And you hear that line time and time again. Does it apply to Charles Haughey?
I'm not sure it does, at least not two decades later. I mean, I spent a very long time thinking about him, maybe too long, and literally every day for the biography I published a number of years back here. And I think he was maybe 15 years dead then when that book came out. And, you know, I do think a lot of people still see him as, you mentioned, self-serving in your introduction, but as vain, perhaps, profligate, some people say corrupt. And certainly there's an argument to be made there, although I don't think it's as strong as perhaps other people think. But use the state to enrich himself. So if you take all those things together, I think most people listening might think of him in those terms. And what I tried to do in my book, and even now here today, is there's much more to all individuals than simply the debit sheet. The credit sheet for Haughey is, I think, considerable, but I'm not persuaded that two decades on, and I don't think I'd be persuaded that even another, over the course of the next three decades, a half a century on, his name will be, as he might have wanted it to be, remembered more fondly, I think, than he is.
I'm looking at a comment here from the Taoiseach at the time of his death, Bertie Ahern. He said of the man that he called boss, Charles Haughey made a huge impact on Irish life over a 35-year political career. I have no doubt history's ultimate judgment on Mr. Haughey will be a positive one. But it is a tension, isn't it, that we see played out, I think, in art, in music, in politics, where you try and separate, let's say, the art from the artist, or the music from the musician, or indeed the policies of a politician from the politician themselves.
There is, and certainly Haughey, a bit like his father-in-law, Sean Lamass, he was a great man for a compartmentalisation. So he could quite easily compartmentalise the complex parts of his life. So you mentioned like policies versus sort of the individual, or even take his attitude to his wife, Maureen, who was a marvellous woman who I interviewed on a number of occasions over my research. And of course, we know that Mr. Haughey conducted a long-standing affair with the journalist Terry Keane, it's a matter of public record for quite a long time. But I've no doubt from talking to Maureen Haughey and those close to her that she loved him very dearly and he loved her. And I don't think, and people would say, well, how could he love her? He was carrying on a long-standing affair. She was very loyal to him in the end, and certainly over the course of the last 6 or 7 years of his life, when he was kind of consigned to Kinsealy, but he was well able, as I said, to sort of compartmentalise the different attitudes and different parts of his life. And on the sort of the corruption question, for instance, many people who gave him money, they're on public record. Dermot Desmond famously said, again on the record, "I gave Charlie Haughey pounds would have been then, and I'd have happily given him a million more. And I interviewed Mr. Desmond, and he told me straight, looked me right in the eye, and he said, I gave Fahid money and I expected nothing back from it. And there was a lot of people like that. Now, there are others who say the sheer act of taking money from a figure who was involved in business in Ireland leaves one open to the allegation of a corruption. Certainly the Moriarty Tribunal found three particular parts where they said Cahy had acted in a corrupt manner. The Cahy family denied this for quite strenuously and vigorously at the time, and I give them some space in my book for that defence. But I'm thinking there's something to it, this idea, as I said, of compartmentalisation. I mean, he would finish work and go home, or he would finish work and go away. And I don't think we get that much more. I think most politicians now are, it's the 24/7 cycle. He didn't think like that, I think.
To speak of Maureen, there's a very interesting quote from Maureen. It would seem everybody hates Charlie Haughey except the people. Right. That's what she said.
Yeah.
But is part of his legacy that he did fundamentally weaken trust, public trust in politics and politicians, that ordinary people in Ireland to this day who lived through that time feel quite betrayed, I think, by somebody like Charlie Haughey and how he operated?
I think the short answer to that is yes, clearly. I think there was a debasing of a public life by the acceptance of private monies.
Did it recover from that?
I don't think so.
No.
I think that still pervades a lot of people. You know, you'd hear vox pops of people saying, oh, they're all in it for themselves and they betray the people. I no more than yourself, Keir, I've interviewed a lot of politicians, both historically and current over the years for my work. I find them to be genuine and well-meaning. I mean, it's difficult, as you know, for anyone to put themselves before the people at the ballot box. I think we have a danger that view now that everyone's in it for themselves takes hold. Certain some people on the extremes of politics or political life would like to think that's the case, but I don't. But I do think Mr. Haughey contributed to it certainly by the fact that the Moriarty Tribunal said that he had at least received 9.1 million pounds over the course of his career, and I think that would equate to well into the 20 millions today. Now, the thing about Maureen Haughey's quote about the voters, Haughey had a disastrous start in public life. He tried to get elected three times and failed, but from his first election in 1957 to the last one he fought in 1989, he topped the poll at every election except the first one with these huge majorities. He never brought Fianna Fáil under, I think, 43 or 44%. So for all the corrosiveness of his personality, he was very close to an overall majority a few times. The people kept denying him and he kept looking for it. And I think there's a mistake made there. I mean, Fianna Fáil would, if you don't mind me saying, pejoratively kill for that type of vote. No, you know, into the 40s. And he was a politician, in my view, that did dominate the sort of the body politic. Himself and Gareth Fitzgerald in the 1980s were, in many ways, the two titans of that period. I think Haughey made some very good decisions, and I think he made some very poor public decisions, particularly in his early years. Remember, he came to power in 1979 as the result of a close leadership battle in Fianna Fáil against George Colley, and he never really had the full support of that political party until probably 1987, after Des O'Malley had left to form the Progressive Democrats.
When you talk about those defeats, right, but this was an individual who came back and came back and came back and ultimately, it appears, wanted to be Taoiseach and wasn't going to give up on that easily. Do you think this was a person who was genuinely committed to public service, who genuinely had visionary policies that he thought could improve Ireland? Or was it an individual who was motivated by ego and power?
I think a bit of both. If that's not sitting on the fence too much, I mean, what's that phrase? There's no fence too high. He can't sit on both sides of it. I think there are some visionary policies. I mean, if you look at things like free electricity and telephone, public transport for pensioners. I was on the train to Cork last week and it was full of pensioners. At least I think there were pensioners, and I'm nearly that age myself over the next few years. I think things like even the regeneration of Temple Bar, not very far away from the studio here, the IFSC, in that sort of 1987 period. Funnily enough, his poll ratings go up. even though there are significant public service significant cuts to public services, they're trying to get the public finances under control after he contributed to those to the decimation of sort of the public accounts in the early 1980s with profligate spending, when he was telling people that they should have tightened their belts, of course. The pursuit of power, to use the word you mentioned, Ciara, was something that was all-encompassing for him. But I tend to believe very strongly, and I wrote a long section about this in my book, that if you look at the early years, he's born sort of in poverty in Belton Park Row. Well, eventually the family moved there. He's born in the west of Ireland in Castlebar, but it's a bit of a peripatetic existence in his first years. Scholarship boy to school, scholarship boy to university, trains as an accountant and a barrister at the same time. And I do think that he went into public life to make a difference. Now, he was excited by the trappings of what that public life could give him. And he did like, to be frank, what we would call a luxurious lifestyle, which was given to him by the fact that he was in this powerful position. But just to give one example, he was £1 million in debt and the AIB said they were going to call it in. And he said, well, I'm a very dangerous opponent. Are you sure you want to do this? And they didn't. And that's how he was able to live. He signed checks and the bank honoured them.
In a line, that divisiveness that you talk about, does it impact Fianna Fáil today?
No, I think Fianna Fáil has moved on. We even talked about Bertie Ahern, who I think will leave a complicated legacy himself. And Fianna Fáil now, it was the great behemoth, the sort of natural party of Ireland, as it would have seen itself. Now it's just one centrist party looking for the votes of many.
Gary Murphy, fascinating as always, and that book, Hahi, is still available in all good bookshops. Thanks, Gary, for coming in.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.